Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. It's a very special Brocast on this wonderful Friday afternoon. Tracy Pearson can't be here, but I brought in a sub, an original, the great Brandon Huffman. Brandon, how the hell are you?
Where you at, John Gold? You didn't get asked. I did.
We didn't go that original. We didn't go that far back into the way back. We just went.
Remember how fun those days were, though? The original Brocast when UCLA recruited well.
When they recruited. You could have stopped that sentence at recruited.
They won football games that mattered.
I went back and listened to one of the original ones I did with John from like 2012, and I sound so young and so optimistic and so giddy. Like, we have a genuine conversation about, is Brett Hundley the best quarterback in UCLA history? Like, those were the kinds of topics we used to discuss. Now it's like, in what way has this hurt your soul today?
Yeah, it was like, I remember when I joined the broadcast. It was in 2013. UCLA was fresh off the number one recruiting class in the country. People that are new to the board, don't laugh. Yes, it did happen. They were, or at least top three. They got really good football players who went on to the NFL, and they came to UCLA out of high school, and they went on official visits, and UCLA used to do multiple junior days and meet and greets.
Those were the days. Oh, those days. Those days are behind us. Many years now, a decade actually is the terminology. We sit here now. It is December 8th. UCLA has a visit weekend, Brandon. So that's something. They've got some visitors coming in. We're in the transfer portal era, so there's transfers looking at UCLA. There's also transfers departing. You know, Tracy and I didn't get to this last week. Tracy teased it a little bit, but probably the thing we should lead off with, UCLA lost its defensive coordinator, Danton Lynn, to USC on Friday of last week. I'm going to give you my take first, and then I want to hear yours. But mine is basically this. Just from like a pride standpoint and like from a institutional standpoint, how the hell do you ever let that happen? Like, I do not understand. And like, look, I'm a pretty logical person. Like, if I thought he was a scrub, I'd say whatever. But even if he was a scrub, making a lateral move across town to USC is one of the worst optics things you can possibly do. Like, it wasn't that long ago that UCLA gave the baseball coach a huge raise just to prevent that exact thing from happening. And that's baseball. That doesn't bring in any money. Look, USC and UCLA are going to be making the same money from the Big Ten deal. I don't get this. I don't get it from a money savings, cost savings perspective at all. And I think the optics of it are horrible. And I think the on-field potential is bad. I don't. Like, if this was quibbling over like $500,000 a year, oh boy, I really don't understand how you ever let this happen.
Do you remember, Dave, speaking of the 2013s, when UCLA was able to hold on to offensive line coach Adrian Clem despite a push by Steve Sarkisian, the then recently hired head coach at USC?
I'm and so how, glad you're here, Brandon, because I was searching for a football example and I couldn't think of one. And there you are with your beautiful memory.
My galaxy brain is useful for something. And I mean, remember clicking on Bro. And at the time, it was USC Playbook, scplaybook.com. I don't think your compadre Ryan had come over yet. And Lindsay Theory was covering the hell out of that. And Clem decided to stay because the direction of UCLA was much more promising at that time. And, you know, it clearly stayed promising for another year or two. But, yes, there was once a time where UCLA was winning head-to-head recruiting battles against USC. When UCLA was keeping coaches away from USC, it was not 4 or 5 years ago that the recently fired Johnny Nansen, who, by the way, has done a phenomenal job as a defensive coordinator at Arizona, like y'all predicted.
Boy, has he. That's incredible, by the way. Like, just stop. Because I was so down on that hire. I thought that was horrible. And the improvement they showed this year was incredible.
As we all predicted. he got fired at USC and then UCLA hired him. I mean, that's kind of where it's been. And now this one is I would say it'd be a kick in the gonads, except I don't think UCLA fans feel any pain anymore in that general region of the body.
Numbed. Numbed. There's been local
anesthetic. Neutered maybe too?
What's that?
Neutered maybe as well?
Maybe. It's numbed, bordering on paralyzed. Like, you're not feeling anything from the waist down. So that one, I'm still baffled by a lot. Like, I don't understand how UCLA hasn't released a public statement affirming that they are keeping Chip Kelly and why. And not because I would agree with the decision. I wouldn't agree with any of their reasoning right now. But they have an opportunity, or they had an opportunity, they may have missed it, to at least attempt to control the narrative and in mm-hmm. some way persuade. And I think the fan base, there are a lot of ardent, longstanding blues, I would call them. People who are, I support the program. I support whoever's in charge of the program, and God love them, totally. But they're looking for answers and they're not getting any. Like, the only public comment that Martin Jarmond has given was to Bill Plaschke in a negatively framed opinion piece in the LA Times. How do you allow that from a PR standpoint? How do you allow the only commentary on your decision to be framed in a hit piece, basically, where they're basically saying you are an empty shirt and your decision makes no sense? Like, there's a way to, I am not in favor of the decision, but there's a way to frame it where it's, mm-hmm. It's really simple. We are disappointed with the result of this season. There is no world where this is an acceptable result for UCLA football. We feel your disappointment. We feel more disappointment than you do. We care a lot about this. We care a lot about what just happened, and we are really disappointed. I have met with Chip Kelly several times. We have discussed specific things we need to do heading into this offseason, and I'm going to be closely monitoring those things, which are building NIL resources, recruiting the heck out of it, and improving on the offensive line. Because when I watched this team this year, that was the main issue I found. Better offensive line play, yada, yada, whatever you want to isolate as the two specifics or three specifics, give those. Say you care. Say you understand what people are saying and say you care about that. And in fact, you care more than that. And I think 50% of the volume would go down. But they're not doing it. And I truly do not understand how they are asleep at the switch here.
It reminds me of that scene in Anchorman where Ron Burgundy says, "I don't believe you." Like, it doesn't sound – it's all – BS. It's all big flowery words. I don't think deep down people in the athletic department feel everything that they say, but they're not making the move.
They're not.
It's irrational.
They're not saying they care. Like, that's the thing is, like, and it's not. And this is the part.
Do something.
I've been trying to write this and I don't know how to write it without it being too bleak. So I'm just going to say it. I think the reason this one feels worse in some ways than previous times that UCLA has been extremely disappointing, either in its macro decision-making or performance on the field, but the reason 34-34, 7-5 feels somehow worse than, pick a Neuheisel season or pick one of the disappointing Jim Mora years or
pick Steve Alford anyway. Like, the reason this one feels worse is because it, like, the things that the cynical folks always kind of thought about UCLA, like, do they really care? Are they really committed? Do they really want to be good? Like, all this kind of stuff. It feels almost mask off now. Like, it feels like, oh, wow. No, they really don't. They don't even care enough to release a statement. Like, they don't even care enough to formally acknowledge the anger in the fan base. Like, they just, what explanation is there besides you, Joe Fan, care a lot more than the people being paid a lot of money to care?
Right. And that's the thing. Like, the apathy alone in the last couple of years, despite UCLA trending up last year, and, you know, this year there seemed to be a little bit of optimism, and it took the Colorado game. It took Coach Prime to get butts in the seats. The apathy alone should have been enough to say, okay, we have got to rip this Band-Aid off. We got to take the, you know, pull the ripcord and jump and get out of here with the move to the Big Ten. You cannot have a lame duck coach going into the biggest transition that this athletic department has had in eons. I mean, I'm 47 years old. So I was 6 years old the year UCLA moved to the Rose Bowl. I'm sure there's been other things since then. Maybe when they changed apparel companies from Reebok to Adidas or Adidas to Under Armour. In my lifetime, now granted, I was born a year after John Wooden retired. In my lifetime, has there been a more seminal moment in UCLA athletic history than the move to the Big Ten? So in a football-driven economy for college sports, in a time where college football is the tail wagging the dog, at a time where it is funding entire athletic programs and everything that they do, when UCLA, who Oklahoma, Texas moving to the SEC, didn't set the world on fire. It was a big deal, but it didn't set the world on fire. A&M had already beat them to the punch. UCLA and USC going to the Big Ten dwarfs anything that Texas and Oklahoma did. And that's Texas, which is, you know, nobody thinks of themselves more highly in the athletic department than Texas. UCLA is joining into the biggest sports media move in college sports in years. And this is how they're going into it? What the hell are they doing? What are they thinking, and why?
Well, and like for me, and I'll just put all cards on the table. You know, everyone's prone to confirmation bias, and I'm trying to avoid that here because it feels like a lot of the data points to what my worst fear was with UCLA going for the Big Ten, which is that it was just a pure money grab, and it wasn't about improving competitive position. It wasn't about getting serious. It wasn't about any of those things. It was just, we want the money. And it's, you know, that thing that some schools have done, you know, Arkansas when it went into the SEC, Rutgers when it went to the Big Ten, these schools that they signed up for money. They didn't sign up to win the SEC or the Big Ten. And you look at the three schools joining UCLA in the Big Ten going into next year, and you've got a playoff contender or a playoff team in Washington. You've got an Oregon team that I don't know. Oregon's program right now, like if you had to ballpark where they are in NIL commitment, like from a booster standpoint, what is it?
Upper echelon. Upper echelon.
Yeah.
Easily.
Like full commitment from a program level to running. And that's been true even pre-NIL. Like they've got the program commitment that you want for a perennial contender. And then you've got USC, which, you know, it's still USC. They still mess some things up, but the arrow is still pointing up for USC. Like they have Lincoln Riley. They just hired UCLA's DC. But UCLA is the odd man out in that group. Mm-hmm. And the level of seriousness they just declared after this season by retaining Chip Kelly, not saying anything about it, and then not retaining their defensive coordinator, who was the entire reason they even won 7 games this year. That's just, wow. I mean, I don't even have words for it because the words are too bleak, but it's just, wow.
I know Rutgers takes a lot of strays.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that to be so obvious at this point without them even in the Big Ten yet.
I think Rutgers takes a lot of strays.
And for good reason, Brian Doan's a product of there. And
mainly, you know, I do it because Brian Doan.
Yeah. I had to be on a conference call with that guy this morning. So, Doan, sorry, you're taking shrapnel today. But UCLA moving to the Big Ten is more on par with Maryland. Like, you have reason to be excited. You have a history of, you know, good sports. You won a national championship in basketball in 2002. Football has really underperformed comparatively to what you're doing with region. Like, Rutgers, nobody expected Rutgers to go into the Big Ten and be a glamorous program. It was strictly for that New York market. Maryland at least had a little bit of tradition, you know, in basketball, football, you know, they were decent. UCLA is closer to being Maryland than it is Rutgers. Because Rutgers was kind of like, all right, we still got to take him. He's family. We kind of need him. He's got a little bit of money. So we'll let him go on vacation with us. But Maryland's like the dude, you used to be so cool to hang out with. Like, what is it that you say you do here now? Like, yeah. we're not exactly sure. And there's, yeah, Maryland's content being 8-4, 7-5. They start off 4-0 every year by playing a crappy schedule. Then they get in the Big Ten and they're mediocre. Very familiar sounding, right?
Yeah.
And they're in a market with the DMV where you got Denver, the DC, Maryland, Virginia, you know, fertile recruiting grounds that have now become completely open to Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. And Maryland just kind of there. And UCLA is going in with so little inspiration and optimism. And this isn't one of those things like we saw it 2 years ago when USC went 4-8, then they hired Lincoln Riley and they went 11-3. Now, did he turn it around in a day? No. I mean, he used the portal. They use a lot of other things. Colorado went from 1-4 wins. UCLA is more likely to end up being a Colorado-type improvement with the change than they are that quick Kalen DeBoer, Dan Lanning sustaining it thing. I mean, that's the thing. Like, this is potentially catastrophic to the football program for a number of years, not just the short-term future, but potentially, you know, a decade plus, in my opinion.
Well, that's bleak.
Maybe I'm being skeptical or cynical, or maybe I'm being realistic. Because here's the biggest thing, Dave. I cover recruiting. All right. This is my 20th. Yes. Huh. A lot of other schools. This is my 21st recruiting class that I've covered since I started with Bro. There has never been a worse buzz about UCLA football than right now. And I mean, I covered the Carl Durrell years. I covered, you know, it was funny. I remember the old running joke when I first started covering recruiting was, oh, no photo attached or no photo available. This is definitely a UCLA recruit. And, you know, then
Dylan Rush. Do you remember Dylan Rush?
Oh, I do. Dylan Rush was, he was like a champion wrestler. I remember I saw him, Tracy and I saw him at the Stanford Nike camp a couple days later. And there was about a 5-hour drive from Palo Alto back to Ventura County where we were just kind of like, is that really, it can't be. Like, this was, I mean, then again, one of the great Hawaii players of all time was duped in Manti Te'o, so maybe we were duped too. Maybe Dylan Rush was doing it before, whatever her name was. But Renaya, there you go. Yeah. But I mean, even you look at the end of the Carl Durrell era, well, his last class that he never actually got to coach, but was partly responsible for, Jonathan Franklin, Raheem Moore, Dayton Jones. So there was a trending upwards in recruiting. Neuheisel had a couple of really good classes. His last class, it's funny, you and I think we were texting about this a couple weeks ago. They only signed like 12 guys in 2011, but you had Brett Hundley, you had Connor McDermott, you had Jake Brendel, and
Eric Kendricks, baby.
We had the Kendricks, Barr, Cassius Marsh class.
Kendricks was the previous year, right?
He was previous year, but the 2011 class, you end up with three of your 12 guys ended up being dudes. Then you had the Mora years, and even the last Mora year, you know, recruiting wise, there were some commits in that class. They ended up never playing for UCLA, but I did a piece in anticipation of there being a coaching change, and only once has UCLA finished in the top five in the Pac-12 under Chip Kelly. And interestingly enough, it was during the COVID year where they had nothing to do but recruit because they were out of boredom. There is no buzz in recruiting. There is not even a buzz in portal recruiting right now. I mean, when did UCLA decide they want to be Columbia or Yale?
Yeah. Like, that's the thing that's kind of shocking to me. And, you know, there's some more stuff trickling in. Like, they're definitely getting after some Mountain West guys, you know, that whole thing. But just the what they're targeting in the portal. And, look, they've offered some guys. They've clearly been in contact with some guys. But it feels slow-paced to me. Like, and not reeking of the necessary desperation that it should be right now. Mm-hmm. Like, they... How many offensive linemen have they offered in the portal right now? Like, I think it's one?
two. San Jose two. State yeah. and San Diego State.
The guy today. That's baffling to me. Because I don't know how you watch what you had this year and come up with, okay, well, we can slow play this a little bit. And then beyond that, I mean, they're losing a lot. I mean, we've talked about, okay, so let's address the transfer portal departures. We talked already last week about Dante Moore and that whole thing, and that was borderline a foregone conclusion after he got demoted midseason. And then obviously Cam Brown and Keegan Jones, but, you know, Chip Kelly doesn't use wide receivers anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But the one this week that I thought was a huge blow, and I'm not, you know, saying something shocking here, was losing Kamari Ramsey.
Yes.
Ramsey is, he was probably their best or second best DB this year. You know, whatever you want to say about Alex Johnson. But it was those two guys. He was, you know, one of those players who, like, in a previous era when there wasn't a portal, would be like a All-American candidate by his fourth year, like, you know, be that kind of UCLA safety. And he's transferring out, which is, you know, it's the sadness of the portal era for fans, but it's also just like, this shouldn't, I mean, look, there's a lot of stuff going on in the portal nationally, and I don't, but like UCLA on a program level, losing its star defensive player, like its star returning defensive player. This would have been the best returning player, I think. Kind of depends on what happens with the Murphy twins, but best returning player on the defense. And that just feels like something that happens to a G5. It feels like something mm-hmm. that happens to a Washington State. It feels like something that happens to Kansas. It doesn't feel still, and this is me from a historical perspective, it doesn't feel like something that should be happening to UCLA, and yet it is.
There's a when that happens to UCLA, there's a failure at the top. And whether that's at the top of the athletic department, at the top of the football program, that is a gigantic failure. And it's inexplicable, and there's no spin. There's no rational spin you can give that to be like, oh, everything's okay. You know, I've seen people go, oh, it's okay. I want players that want to be Bruins. You don't think Kamari Ramsey didn't want to be a fucking Bruin? He committed to them in the first place. He signed with them and started for them. This is a failure at the top. And the sunshine pumping. Oh, I want guys that want to be Bruins. Dude, half the freaking roster didn't want to be Bruins. They went to other schools in the first place. They came to UCLA because there was better opportunity when they left North Texas or Harvard or Penn or wherever the hell Ivy League school or FCS school UCLA got them from. Ball State. You want to be in freaking Muncie, Indiana or Westwood? Let's be honest. You know, Kent, well, I don't even know what city Kent State is in. Is it in Kent? Is there a city of Kent in Ohio?
I think wherever it's in Indiana. Indiana. Yeah.
There's a Kent in Washington. But this whole point, this is an era of
Ohio, I think.
Ohio, yes, there you go. This is an era where we're playing for the names on the back of the jerseys instead of the front of the jerseys, the side of the helmets, flat out. So if it's going to be the model, like it's like when a guy gets drafted. No kid ever dreams of playing for the Detroit Lions, with all due respect to Detroit Lions fans. They dream of playing for the Packers. They dream of playing for the Patriots, the Cowboys. All right? So college is starting to turn into that where it's no longer about your childhood dream. It's about where am I going to have that best opportunity to showcase myself for NIL and the NFL. When you squander the most talented young defender that you have, and let's be real, Dave, I anticipate that he will be reunited with Danton Lane in 2024. Okay? Just based on what I'm hearing and what I'm speculating, I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. And like
that's an organizational failure, though.
Look, and Tracy reported it, and I think this is somewhat valid, and so I want to, like, put it, not somewhat valid, I think it is valid, but I think it's, you know, part of the explanation, which is, you know, UCLA didn't come up with the money for Kamari Ramsey. But, and this is the part that I think gets lost in the NIL conversation, is would the ask be as big if UCLA's program was in a different direction? Like if UCLA was in a different position and in a different competitive position. And that's the stuff where it's soft, but you can't know. Like you don't know. Do people leave a thriving, you know, organization where producing top tier NFL players all the time? And I mean top tier, like actual first couple of rounds that are actually going to play in their, you know, first couple of years. And, you know, one where they're winning and competing for the Pac-12. And maybe the ask is still there. But if you're doing that, you know what? Your NIL funds are going to be bigger, too. And if you get serious about NIL, like, it's just like when you say, oh, you know, he didn't want to be a Bruin or he's leaving because of NIL. Well, that's not – people like to blame fans for that sort of stuff. And it's like, look, I mean – yeah, you can ask people to donate a ton of money to a failure, to like a failed state. But most people who have a lot of money, like learn the like number one most important business rule or investing rule, which is don't throw good money after bad. And like you might be able to get some, but there's a reason that rule is in place. And like UCLA right now, the way they're approaching the portal, they're offering a bunch of like Harvard guys. You know, and it's just, what are we doing here? Like, what's the end goal? What's the plan with this? Like, what's the purpose? Like, are you the way Martin Jarman talked about this decision to Bill Plaschke? Like, he emphasized like graduation rates and all that kind of stuff. And look, I think there are there's extraneous bits of following a program, being a fan of a program that people are proud of, right? Like, oh, these guys graduate, they're good citizens and all that kind of stuff. And I don't mean to be like a callous, you know, Texas booster right now, but
1995 was really cool. That was a great era for getting those kind of players.
Yeah, that's not the point. The point is to be good. The point is to try to win things. And if on top of that, you also have good kids, good citizens, all that kind of stuff, great. But the point of this whole thing, the point of this whole endeavor is to be good, to instill pride in your fan base so that they, and like on a dollars and cents level, so they will give you money, and also to increase your brand so that more people will want to go to your school and then be donating money to it. It's a marketing endeavor, and you don't market your football program by saying they all graduate. You market it by winning games. And that's how it becomes a positive marketing vessel and not a money sink for your university. I don't understand what's going on.
I remember one of the greatest lines in the movie, The Program. You know, when was the last time 75,000 people showed up to watch a science experiment? Like, James Caan uttered some of the most timeless words of all time. And it's true. Like, when was the last time? I mean, yes, there is a place for college athletics to be about academia. It's called the Ivy League. All right. There's a reason they don't allow red shirts in the Ivy League. There's a reason that UCLA is able to recruit the Ivy League after those guys get their degree. And then they decide they want to, you know, play a little bit of football at a higher level. There's a reason for that. But here's the thing. It's 2023. It's very clear the direction that college sports is going. It's very clear the direction that college football is going. We see it every day. I hear it all the time. Man, the transfer portal is killing college football. No, it's not. It's college football, maybe at its best, it may be at its, you know, highest crescendo right now because of the interest in the sport. You know, I was in Nashville on Monday for our Portal Palooza, and I was talking with a couple of the guys that I work with that were on college staffs, and we all said, like, this is more exciting than signing day, because the signing day excitement, the diehards know who those recruits are. A casual knows who Kyle McCord is. A casual knows who Walter Nolan is. A casual knows these names going into the portal. So in an era where college football is taking lumps and punches left and right, it's never been more popular. It's never been viewed more. It's never been discussed more. And this is the path that UCLA is choosing to evolve with college football.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Like, they are, this is the thing, and this is the part that's like feeling so discordant to me and feels so mask off, is that they are taking the path of, we will not participate in a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, we're going to enter the Big Ten. And it's like, okay, so you're going to take the money, but you're not going to actually attempt to win, to improve your competitive position. And this is the part where I just think it's a failure of leadership, and it's at the program level. It's higher up than that. And it's just, you got to have a plan. You got to have a vision. You got to have an idea of what you are. And you also have to have some perspective about what UCLA is. And I don't mean this in like, oh, UCLA's been dog shit for 20 years. So that, but like 25, who's counting? Minus three for Jim Mora. 22 intermittent. You got to have an idea about what the potential of a program is, because look there, I mean, not to get all cornball, but like UCLA, it's the optimist thing. And if you're in athletics, if you're the AD, if you're the football coach, you have to, and this is true of like so many people in athletics that I'm kind of baffled that we're not seeing it, but like you have to have optimistic vision. You have to have the idea of what your program can be at its highest level. Your job is to be that visionary. It's not to dumb down expectations. It's not to couch this stuff. It's not to tell people they're being unrealistic. Tell people, oh gosh, you gotta reset your expectations. It is to shoot for the highest end potential for your program and then see where that ends up. And I don't see that. Like, I don't see a vision for this being. Because, like, look, right now, I would say UCLA football is performing at its, God, take the first 3 years out and just look at the last 3 years of UCLA. I would say it's performing at about it's 42nd percentile. Like, it's a little bit below where it can be on average. And I think it's getting, 80% level offensive coaching. This past year, it was like 85th percentile defensive coaching. Recruiting and talent acquisition is at like the 20th percentile for what UCLA should do, but they're doing well enough on the coaching aspects of it and the development aspects of it that it's making up for some of the talent acquisition stuff. But all in all, it's below even like, I think, half the potential of this program. And that's not just like wins and losses. It's, do you have enough talent in the program that you can basically be guaranteed to get to a bowl game every year, which is where UCLA should be in perpetuity. Like, no matter what joker you have at coach, you're getting enough talent in the program to win six games every year. And that's the baseline. And right now they don't. Like, it's, they're having to coach their asses off to win seven games this last year. And play a shitty schedule. So it's just like,
am I allowed to say that on the broadcast? I know podcast of champions.
So bring it. But it's just, I don't, like, your vision for what this program could be is, it should be in the old Pac-12. I don't know what the state of play is going to be in the Big Ten. I don't even know what it is for a really good UCLA in the Big Ten. I think they're still like running fourth. But in the Pac-12, that is, be good pretty consistently, like make a bowl game at minimum every single year, be pretty good most years, meaning 8 or 9 wins, and then every like fourth year, really compete for a conference title. And that's my vision for like, what's the like 85th percentile UCLA performance. I mean, 100th percentile is you get a generational coach and he wins like he does everywhere else. But 85th percentile, what you do with like a Jim Mora when he's sane, like that's what you can do at UCLA. And it just seems like there's just a complete lack of vision, drive, whatever it is to get to that level.
And like I said, it goes back to there is just absolutely no buzz about UCLA recruiting.
Yeah.
You know, you look at UCLA's highest rated recruit this year, that's committed. Kwazi Gilmer, Mark Schroller. What do they have that the other guys don't have? UCLA in their blood. Mark Schroller's parents both went to UCLA. Kwazi's mom went to UCLA.
Yeah.
All right. Schroller's dad played for UCLA. So predisposed to UCLA swung them towards the Bruins with other offers elsewhere. You take out those two, and in a lot of cases, UCLA was the best offer for some of these guys, or the best committable offer. And that's the thing. There's no buzz about UCLA recruiting. There's no buzz about UCLA football. The butt of the joke, and deservedly so, is the empty seats picture 10 minutes before every game, during the game, the tarps. And the thing is, like, if you look back in the 2015 and 16, when UCLA started to dip under Jim Mora, they were still competitive. I mean, UCLA went into the USC game in 2015 with a chance to still win the Pac-12 South and have a rematch with Stanford. Now, that Stanford team would have ran them again like they did earlier in the season because nobody was talking Christian McCaffrey at that time.
Yeah.
But even in 16, you know, they were 4-8, but they should have beat Stanford. They choked that game away. They hung with a really improving USC team. They had a horrible game against.
Josh Rosen got hurt. Like, there was a lot that went on that year.
I think Fothell played that game. And remember the first half of the game, Jordan Lasley was lighting up his boy, Adoree Jackson, in that game. And Sam Darnold started to do Sam Darnold in college things. But even in 2017, I mean, they hung with USC, who won the Pac-12 that year, and it cost Jim Mora his job. When they were bad, they weren't horrible. Yeah. UCLA is the most uninspiring 7-5 team this year that I've seen. Even if you go back to the year that Bob Toledo got fired, when he was 7-5, the SC game they got annihilated in, and that was kind of the breaking point. But there were games that year where they were competitive that they could have won or that they should have won. Like, you cannot shit the bed against Cal and ASU at home and have any kind of excuse for that. And you know, just the buzz is lacking. And now this buzz is going to carry out for a whole other 9 months. Yeah. I mean, when you think about the coaching changes that have happened, think about how popping, for lack of a better phrase, Colorado was from the day they hired Deion until they lost their first game. But the 8 months before the season started, there was a buzz that was positive. And nothing ruins the buzz more than the season actually starting. But
it's buzzed for another month. I mean, the thing with Colorado, and this is something like Folsom Field was not selling out. I don't know when the last sellout they had before this season was, but they weren't getting their consistent, whatever it is, 52,000 seater or whatever it is. And that's not the Rose Bowl. It's harder to sell that thing out. Did they sell out every home game this year? I'm pretty sure they did.
They did. And I think multiple road games sold out.
I mean, and look, is UCLA going to hire Deion? No. Are they going to hire somebody with similar buzz? No. And I don't anticipate when UCLA eventually does hire a new football coach that it's going to come with that exact same sort of bump. But you get somebody in there with energy, with a little bit of understanding that, like, being the head coach of a football program is as much marketing as it is coaching football. Which is something Jim Mora got like before he went insane. Does everyone remember he emceed the spring game at the Rose Bowl? Like, he was full on running the games and running all that stuff, like carnival barking. And like Rick Neuheisel gets like dumped on for a little bit of that, but like Jim Mora was doing it, and he's like a dyed in the wool football maniac, and he was doing it. Like some understanding that this is a marketing position too, that you need.
And I know we don't talk about signing day 2014 ever on here. We never talk about it. In fact,
I don't remember it. I don't remember anything about that signing day, and I would thank you not to bring it up.
Yeah, but I will say that if you want to remember the day that we shall not discuss for any reason,
ESPN was set up at UCLA the entire day of signing day. And if you remember, as players were getting ready to make the decision, whether it was Malachi Dupree or Adoree or I think Juju maybe announced that afternoon, the jersey kept changing to the number that each recruit was wearing for high school. So, like, it was like that's how ahead of the game they were. And in 2014, and yes, they didn't get any of those players. Thank you, Kenny. Thank you, Kenny, for salvaging some excitement. But I mean, that was what UCLA was like. I mean, Mora, how many facilities were built because of the buzz of those first few years that Jim Mora produced? You know, how many different things were done in the athletic department across the board, not just the football program, but across the board because of that.
Well, and I want to be careful here because I want to make something clear. They absolutely should have fired Jim Mora when they fired him. Jim Mora should have been retained advocate, and I'm not even saying Jim Mora was all that great. What he was competent for 3 years at like the basics of the UCLA job. Chip Kelly is a far superior football
coach. Not just the UCLA job, Dave. That's what a head fucking football coach should be doing.
Right.
Period.
But Chip Kelly is a better football coach, like the coach part of it. Like he's better at like I know how schemes work and I know how they fit each other. Like I'm not sure Jim Mora is all that, you know, well versed in some of this stuff. But he understood the dynamics of being a college football coach and he understood it immediately having never done it before. Like he got it. He wanted to do it, and for 3 years, he was really good at it. And then he was not very good at it, and you saw what that looked like. If he'd not lost his mind, he would probably still be at UCLA, and they'd probably be potentially building a statue for him at some point because that formula of getting up – like, think about the booster level of engagement in 2014, and think about, like, the personal relationships that Jim Mora had built with boosters. And the interest level in football around that time. And then just say he doesn't lose his mind. Like he doesn't, you know, go completely off the deep end, hire Tom Bradley, hire Kennedy Polamalu as his offensive coordinator. Let's say he just keeps his spread principles. He doesn't get completely like sent into a dark funk by Stanford. And he just continues to do what he does. There's probably a conference title in there somewhere. I don't know where. But, like, look at the Pac-12 the last few years. If Jim Mora kept running a decent program, they would have been right up there with Oregon under Latin Jim Mora, Mario Cristobal. And not to go all counterfactual, because what I'm saying is he is what you can do on the open market. He's a guy they hired out of a TV studio. Like, he's a guy they hired out of, like, ACL surgery who was coaching his kid's high school team. Like, he's not... This isn't a tough ask. This isn't going hiring Nick Saban. It's hire somebody who cares, who wants to do the work of being a college football coach. And is it harder now? Yeah, it's harder. Is it harder because of decisions UCLA has made for the last 8 years? Yeah. Is it harder because of changes in the world of college football? Also, yes. But you get the right guy in there, the right guy with a certain amount of energy. And it's never been... The potential for a quick change has never been more obvious. Like you don't have to take 3 years to turn around a program anymore. Some do. Arizona got to this level after 3 years. But you can also have an immediate boost thanks to the transfer portal, thanks to all these different tools that now coaches can use. It's never as far away as you think, but I don't know, and this is maybe the historical perspective. And after this, we will, I promise, get into actual recruiting stuff.
I have one more rant in me still.
Yeah, but I have a question for you first. Is the situation that the new coach inherits, say it's after 2024, is it worse than anything that a previous UCLA coach has inherited?
Football or athletically?
Football.
No. This will be the all-time worst because – they're at an era where they're playing with both arms tied behind their backs and they're not using either of their legs to try to do anything about it either. And, you know, I mean, obviously Mick Cronin showed just how quickly you could resurrect things on the basketball court. Jim Mora showed what some competent coaching does with some talent. That was before the portal era. What you have right now is you're going to have half of the roster
that's on the team right now, as we speak, a week before the Los Angeles Bowl, half that roster will not be there in 2025, whether it's because they graduate, whether their COVID year finally runs out, whether they transfer. So a new coach is – that's why I said this is going to be closer to Colorado than USC in 2025, where Lincoln Riley had to, you know, get 15 transfers, including a generational talent in Caleb Williams, where the new head coach might have to get 40 new players to come in. And how do you do that in an era where there's no portal? Where there's no NIL watching it. But you mean to tell me that 10 years ago, if NIL was in play, that Jim Mora would not have rallied the troops to have those resources to be able to be competitive?
Well, and that's the thing. If a consistent program, and this is where, like, I think somebody should do an analysis at some point, the programs that were consistently led through the beginning of the transfer portal and the beginning of the NIL era, and those that weren't, like, and this is the thing, is like UCLA, when Chip Kelly started, neither of those things existed, and then they existed soon thereafter. But I will say, I'll caveat that he was still, quote, building his program at that point, so he didn't yet have it off the ground. But like the programs that had a coach in place and all that kind of stuff, how much better are they performing right now than the ones who've had a coaching change in the middle of it? And, you know, it's kind of circular, but I do think that plays a role. And if, you know, if UCLA had had some consistency through this period, like if they, you know, that prized word that Martin Jarman cited in his article, his quotes to Bill Plaschke, consistency, if they'd had consistency in this period from a coach who had some success, you know, Jim Mora, would it have been different? Would there be more funding in place earlier to retain roster, to add pieces, like all that kind of stuff? All right, you had one final rant, and then we got to get into recruiting.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it goes back to, like, you could have all the excuses in the world, but productivity produces the results that people want and people are accustomed to and that UCLA should be doing. And again, while the Jim Mora years, you know, teetered off, Chip Kelly walked into a pretty good situation with facilities and the ability to come in with his reputation as a winner in college instead of being 49ers Chip to be able to get the training table. I remember talking to Brew McCoy's dad at the opening one year, and he said that the sports science, the sports nutrition program at UCLA was better than any school that they were considering at that time. And that was all a byproduct of what Jim Mora had rallied the troops to do for a number of years. And Chip Kelly squandered that. He squandered all that stuff, and now they're playing from behind. And again, you can blame Martin Jarman, you can blame Dan Guerrero, but it all kind of focuses on one person here, dude.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I got one final one because of what you just said. Something that's always kind of stuck in my craw as somebody who covered a lot of these kids in high school, who the guys who were jettisoned from the program in Chip Kelly's first couple of years.
Jalen Phillips.
Well, yeah, I mean, from a talent standpoint, but also like the idea that all these guys were knuckleheads, the idea that all these guys were bad seeds or like part of some underbelly is just absolute horseshit. Like, yes, there was some of this. There is in every single football program. There is in Chip Kelly's program. It's everywhere. Was there a little bit more at the tail end of the Jim Mora era? Maybe. Was it 40 guys? No. This is the kind of stuff that, like, again, like, not to do basketball analogies because it tends to anger people, but like Mick Cronin walks into the UCLA roster 2019. And he says, hey, you guys want to leave? You can leave. But if you stay and you work hard, you're my guy. I'm not a my guy, your guy, like previous coach's guy. You're my guy if you want to stay and stick around. That's the successful attitude of coaches who have success. If you're looking for like one thing why I was like early on very negative about the Chip Kelly era, it's you don't build a roster that way. You just don't. Nope. And there's so many other ways to do it. There's so many other, like, you're not confident enough in your systems that you can turn a bunch of like 18 to 20 year olds into your kind of players. Then your systems are bad. Like, they're impressionable young people. They're not like, it's just a weird, weird attitude that you can't like take these guys and make them your kind of guys. And that's, I don't love OKG recruiting for that very reason, because you can make anybody your kind of guy. I mean, within reason. Like, yeah, are there some hardened guys, and I won't name names, but a certain linebacker who was recruited in 2014, who you're not going to make him your kind of guy no matter what you do? Mm-hmm. Probably. But by and large, most people are, most of these kids who get to the level where they can be admitted to UCLA, where they've got family enough involved that they're staying on the straight and narrow in high school and doing all that kind of stuff, they're good kids. They're good enough kids that you can make them, you can do whatever you want. You can make them work. It's just, I truly don't, it was setting themselves up for failure from the very jump. And I don't think they've ever gotten out from under that. I think it very much cleared the table so that they could start to be the Indiana program that they always wanted to be or something. But it's just, I fundamentally do not understand it. And I think it was a failure of vision. And I keep using that word, but I think it's a failure of understanding of what you can be, what you can do with Jalen Phillips or whoever it is. And maybe,
I mean, Latu is what UCLA should have got from Jalen Phillips.
Yeah.
And, you know, that it's when you see Jalen Phillips become a first rounder and be an All-American at Miami, you know, it numbs you. And you're telling me you couldn't find a place for him there, or you couldn't have worked out whatever it was. And that's the thing. It's just been like,
and I haven't gotten retirement issues that they had in those first couple of years. Suddenly they don't have any of those anymore.
Right.
It's almost like those were an excuse to cut guys. I don't know.
100%. 100%. And here's what I go back to too. I mean, this is what I was actually wanted to start my rant about is, you know, when we were going to talk about the visitors this weekend and how there's a number of them from the portal. And there's some good players that are coming in from the portal this weekend. Obviously, you got Nico Flores, who was the second leading receiver at Notre Dame. You know, that's a nice portal visitor. But here's the thing. For every Zach Charbonnet and Latu Latu, you get a Jake Wiley or a Kuntra Kunti, the tackle
Kadir Kunta.
Kadir Kuti. And then what was the kid from Bowling Green that they got?
Jordan Anderson.
Yeah. What was your favorite play that he made this year? you know, for every Michael Penix and Caleb Williams, you get a Phil Jurkovic or a Keaton Slovis or a JT Daniels. Just because they're from the portal doesn't mean they're good. Just because you think that they're good out of the portal, it's same with high school recruiting. And for yes, was Charbonnet good? He was absolutely good. Was Latu Latu good? Yes. But the Murphy twins good? They've been very good. Darius Musa has been solid. But there's a lot of Jags from the portal. And that's the problem when you rely on the portal. If you look at the teams that are playing in the playoffs this year, yes, three of the four schools that are in the playoffs, or two of the four schools that are in the playoffs, have transfer quarterbacks. Although I wouldn't really consider Quinn Ewers one, because he was committed to Texas and he's from Austin in the first place, or Dallas. But the point is that you look at the nucleus of Texas's roster, of Alabama's roster, Michigan's roster, and Washington's roster, outside of Penix, Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan, Troy Fautin, all those guys are homegrown recruits. The teams that are winning national championships and competing for national championships are doing it with a homegrown program, and then they're mix and matching a couple of transfer guys. They are not relying strictly on the portal. Jonathan Smith, who was discussed ad nauseum on the board over the last month because he was a potential guy to replace, he used the portal at its infancy when he first got to Oregon State, and then over the years, he just tinkered with spots here. He stopped relying on the portal. He stopped relying on JUCO transfers. He was going with development. If you look at Oregon State right now, those guys that have been really good are fourth and fifth year guys. That's how you build a freaking college football team. You don't rely on the portal. You get off your ass. You get out and recruit. You offer high schoolers. You don't take pictures at schools that do not have talent. You get your ass to those schools. You recruit. You offer. You sign.
Thank you, Brandon. And it's so true. This is another thing where, like, again, my confirmation bias is showing, and I acknowledge that, is I was skeptical about the transfer portal from the beginning. And initially, UCLA found a lot of success with it. I would say their hit rate on the first couple of transfer portal classes was extremely high. But that was because NIL wasn't a real thing yet. And,
I think I popped maybe an early adopter. In my head. Sorry. I just gave myself a headache.
But they were an early adopter too. But increasingly, you know, this past class, a lot of misses. And then and then acquisition with no plan. Again, that vision word. But you go get J. Mike and you get Kyle Ford, you got to have a plan for using those guys, because the worst thing you could do is create negative word of mouth as soon as you get these guys out of the portal, as soon as you invest in these guys out of the portal, and then you don't use them.
What about the quarterback situation?
I mean, there's just so many things where it's like,
The recruiting of the quarterback. You get Colin Schley to come in, and then you have Dante Moore. You're bringing in Luke Duncan. You have Ethan Garber, who's waited his turn. You still have Chase Griffin in the program. Like, and this like is you said, acquisition with no plan.
And not to go all hindsight, because it's not. This is stuff that you can see in real time. You can see it happening in real time, where it's like, well, do you – and I made this hamster wheel analogy like a year or two ago, where it's like, once you get on the portal hamster wheel, you got to keep running. Because you're not the guys who you were developing are going to want to leave, or they're not going to be as committed, and they're just going to be like, okay, I guess I'm not going to play here. And you got to keep then reloading with transfer guys. And it's just, it creates this feedback loop where you're not running it like a college football program. You're running it like a pseudo pro franchise where you have to bring in free agents every single offseason because the contracts don't last longer than 5 years.
And you're doing it on the Oakland A's budget.
And you're doing it on the Oakland A's budget. And it's just, what's the vision? What's the plan? What's, and this is what I want. And to circle back to the front of it again, before we get to the visit weekend, it's, this is what I wanted articulated in a statement. Like, what I would like articulated by Martin Jarmond is, here's the plan. Here's what we've talked about with Chip Kelly. Here is his vision. Here is my vision for that vision. Here's how I'm going to be focusing on him executing that vision, and I'm going to be focused on the 2024 offseason and season to see the execution of that vision. That will be determining my next steps going forward. That's what I want to be said, but it's just, what's the plan for all this? Is it just to become an Ivy League program that's actually competing at the FBS level? Because if so, that's rough, man.
Does UCLA want to be... I mean, and this is a bad analogy because, you know, Mark Stoops has done a really good job and he's got one of the best jobs in America because he literally just needs to keep fans excited about Kentucky for 2.5 months and then hand it over to Calipari underachieving for the rest of the year. Mack Brown puts asses in the seat. Mike Elko and David Cutcliffe gave Duke reason to, you know, Lance Leipold, maybe the best coach in the Big 12 right now, that or at least is staying before Kyle Whittingham gets there. Is UCLA just trying to give people something to do for 2 months before basketball season starts, you know, or do they want to be competitive in football? Are they content with being the school that everybody wants to go visit for road games when the Big Ten schedule starts, or do they want to be competitive? Do they want to be the 9 o'clock Beth Mowins game on ESPN 17 or the Big Ten network when they're playing Rutgers, or do they want to play on the Peacock network or on CBS at night? What do they want to do? That's the theme, you know, because we've talked about it before. And you see it every year when the NCAA tournament comes around or when, you know, the blue bloods of college basketball start off football season really well. And, you know, when you look at Carolina and Kentucky and Duke and Kansas, they're all off to good starts and UCLA's in there. UCLA's had the best football program of those five forever. Indiana's like a career under 500 program. I don't consider them a blue blood. It's been like 40 years since they're relevant. But my point being that even the traditional blue bloods in college basketball that have been mediocre in football have passed where UCLA is right now. And that's inexcusable because one of those schools is in the city of Lawrence, freaking Kansas. And you know where their quarterback's from? Lawndale. Dave, you don't live far from Lawndale, do you? Lawndale to Westwood is how long?
It's at the end of the 105.
As the crow flies, you know, it's quick. No, I'm not saying that UCLA should have recruited Jalen Dells, but my point is that Kansas is saying we aren't going to have talent in the state of Kansas, so we're going to go to Los Angeles and get a quarterback who's going to change our fortunes forever. What does UCLA do? Oh, let's go to the portal. Oh, we'll get lucky that this guy really wants to be in Los Angeles. Oh, he just left after a year.
Yeah.
Fantastic work, everybody.
Yeah. Well, and I would note, I think five of the guys who went into the portal from out of state, just noting. For everyone out there.
And there's also one that's from the San Fernando Valley that happened to be your stud in the back
in the secondary who you flipped away from Stanford in the 40-year decision.
Yeah. Go. Anyway, go Bruins. All right. Hey, there's a visit weekend coming up, Brandon.
Yes, let's talk about recruiting.
There's a visit weekend coming up. So UCLA is getting a variety of guys. Jensen Somerville, the commit, longtime offensive line commit from out of state, from Utah. They're getting another quarterback coming in, a former Michigan State commit, Henry Hasselbeck, son of Matt. Matt was his name, right?
Yep.
And then Rico Flores from Notre Dame transfer, TJ Crandall, Colorado State corner transfer, and San Jose State offensive lineman Fernando Carmona and safety Jace Oliver from Tulsa. And then there's also going to be Marcus Ratcliffe, the safety from San Diego State. He's going to start his visit on Monday. So one thing I'll say is I looked at all these guys. I looked at some of their advanced stats. They're all in some form or fashion. They'd be good enough gets. Like, and this is not like these would be good guys to add to a decent UCLA team's depth chart. So these aren't like huge reaches. They're not, you know, out of this world. Like, oh my God, they're going down a level. You look at all the names of the schools they're coming from and you're like, huh, but they're all like Fernando Carmona was the best offensive lineman on a pretty good offensive line. Jace Oliver is probably the one that I'm the most skeptical of. He had some bad tackle rates at Tulsa, but he's a really good cover guy. And looking at them, you know, this is it's a decent enough crop of guys for this first portal weekend, but I don't see replacements for star players in this group.
Yeah, because there are none. There aren't any there. And, you know, here's the thing, too. Like, you look at this group, I mean, they're getting all these portal guys to come in. I mean, TJ Crandall has a handful of offers from other schools. This is the first of his visits. Rico Flores has other schools that they're interested in. And if you're Rico Flores, you left the school where you like the receivers coach. I mean, he didn't even have UCLA in his top three when he committed. So it wasn't like UCLA was high on his list out of high school. And you just had the J Mike experience. You just had, you know, Cam Brown's leaving. You have receivers that Kyle Ford that came in. I mean, Rico Flores is his comp might be Kyle Ford, maybe not as, you know, Kyle's obviously had the injury issues that have slowed his college career, but you know, he's, you know, Tobias Merriweather, if he comes in next week, I mean, there's some receivers there, but you know, it's bodies. It's not like there's this Zach Charbonnet who is a dude and you know is going to fit right into this team and be awesome. You know, Fernando Carmona, I mean, yeah, he was good on a solid San Jose State team, but UCLA has just seen what happened when they've had FCS guys come and play in that lineup. It doesn't mean just because you're good at FCS doesn't automatically. Drew has a party they offer. He isn't even visiting. But like when your two tackle offers are to Mountain West guys, that's not a guarantee that they're going to be duped. No. And, you know, TJ Crandall, I'm a big fan of TJ Crandall. I watched him a lot in high school. And I'm just kind of surprised his recruitment has taken off because he was, you know, he's only been in college for, you know, 4 months. He was doing track in the spring at his high school. You know, it's just, again, don't miss, there was a wise man who once coached on the sidelines at UCLA and Pauly Pavilion. His phrase was, don't mistake activity with achievement. Just because you're bringing guys in doesn't mean that those guys are going to achieve anything. It means you're bringing guys in. And
people aren't going to see the video, but I think it was funny that we were both doing the surrender cobra at the same time.
Oh man, it is. I will say this: at least the buzz that is non-existent on the message boards and on Twitter hasn't infiltrated those guys that are in the portal. Because if it weren't for the portal, there would be literally nothing happening right now.
Yeah.
My son one day said this to me when he was probably, you know, he's a very mature 17, but he was probably a young 15. And he said, Dad, man, NIL in the portal, man, it's messing college football up. I'm like, no, it's not. What it is, it's keeping me employed and it's giving me fabulous content to cover. So this is great content. But if you take that 30,000 foot view and you look at it, and if you're a UCLA fan who's listening to this, I know we've depressed Thesaurus Rex the hell out of this broadcast, but like at least there's the portal to give
some kind of news. Not saying it's exhilarating and exciting news, although did you see there was a, I think it was Karen Revelle that tweeted it, that the Los Angeles Bowl ticket sales have been among the top 10 since the bowl was announced. They've had the top 10 largest increase in ticket sales based on the two teams playing.
A lot of Boise fans coming to the game,
or a lot of UCLA fans that are just like, "Hey, man, I want to go to a game at SoFi and sit in the lower bowl, and it's affordable." You know,
that makes sense. I mean, I haven't
been to a game at SoFi, but my son and I literally we planned to go down to LA next weekend a month ago to go to a Rams game. He's a Rams fan. I'm like, "Yeah, let's go to the LA Bowl." At that point, it was looking like, I don't know, Arizona and like UNLV. I'm like, "That'd be fun. Let's go to a bowl game." He's been to a bunch of college football games. Uh-huh. Never been to a bowl game. Now it happens to be UCLA against Boise State. I mean, not at all that we would have predicted, but there is at least something to discuss and write about, because these next 8 months, God bless you that have to go to practice during spring ball at 7 a.m.
Yeah, I'm
thinking of you, Dave.
I'm excited for bowl practices next week. I mean, just like inside baseball for everyone. I don't know. Like, I don't know what I'm going to ask Chip Kelly about. Like,
you're playing quarterback.
Yeah, like who's playing quarterback is a great question. Who's? I mean, it'll be fun to go to practice and see who's still there from the transfers. See who's still there from the NFL potential departures. Like, if any of those guys are opting out, like, I can't imagine a world where anybody advising Leatu Latu is telling him you should play in the LA Bowl. But it'll be interesting to see if the Murphys are out there practicing. Like, are they planning on going to the NFL?
Now, Boise State will be playing with their third-string quarterback in that game.
And potentially not their running back, too?
He decided that he was going to stay, and he is staying at Boise State, not going into the portal. But Maddox Batson's hurt. Taylen Green, their starter for the championship game last week, is in the portal. So they will be down to their third-string quarterback next week. But they've got a coach that's got those troops fired up to be there. And as we've seen numerous times in UCLA's illustrious bowl history, the team that wants to be there is typically the team that wins.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a Boise State team that also surged over the end of the season. So UCLA, if you were familiar with the last four games of the season, didn't exactly surge.
Was a surge, all right. Like, you know, when those power surges happen and everything, all the life is sucked out.
Blows out some fuses. There's also
a surge of experience.
There's also a basketball game tomorrow. We're not going to belabor the whole game. Villanova's lost some games recently. I think it's winnable for UCLA. We'll see. See if Barque plays. But that's basketball.
Say that again. That sounded really cool.
Barque. Barque Buyuk Tunjil. You like that?
I want to make up my ringtone.
Yeah, I bet. All right. Well, this was depressing enough, I think, for everyone. Do you think we depressed them enough?
I mean, if you're not depressed, you might have a headache like I do right now. Like, I literally, the right side of my head is bulging. I think I use too many bad words, and Greg Biggins is going to give me a hard time. He always calls me Andrew Dice Clay because of some of my vocabulary, but.
Yeah. No, you outdid me, and I'm usually the king of that on any podcast.
Tracy, if you're listening to this, I listen to too much Podcast of Champions, so I thought I had the green light because, you know, this is Dave's Friday language or Thursday language.
It's a great point. It's a great point.
It's funny because whenever you use these very descriptive words, I always love Ryan's response. Like, he just laughs in his laughing laugh.
Yeah, he goes,
exactly. And it just, I'm in my truck. Dave, I got to tell you this. I want everybody on the broadcast to hear this. My son is a senior in high school. We were driving. We were in Indiana. We went out to watch the Ohio State Notre Dame game, and we were going to the Purdue Wisconsin game the day before. So we were driving from our hotel in Chicago to Indiana. We were listening to the podcast of Champions, and you had said a couple of different things, and he didn't really register that we were listening to the podcast of Champions because I had my Google Maps on, so he couldn't see who it was. And you said three or four different things. You're like, dude, this guy is hilarious. I'm like, dude, David Woods is a riot. And he's like, wait, that's David Woods? Oh, my gosh. Dude, now it all makes sense because he follows you on Twitter and he sees all your funny things on Twitter. And he's like, dude, it all makes sense now. Like, this guy's like the funniest dude I've ever heard. And yes, it was.
You've got to listen to more people.
Yeah, well, that dude, he might need to expand his horizons a little bit more. But I thought it was funny because – you know, you're like the everyman in the podcast, and you gave me, you know, basically made me feel like I had free reign today. But folks, it will get better. It will get
everyone
better.
Everyone forgives Huff.
Yeah. See, I'm very, if you were looking at me, you would see, oh, he looks so nice and sweet. We should forgive him. But guys, it will get better with recruiting. It might not be until 2029. But it really, knock on wood, I don't think it can get any worse. And we will have plenty of information coming back on Bro next week about all the visitors.
That's what I will say. And this is the optimism point for everyone. And I know it's hard to hear this right now, but this is the feeling you feel right now is actually the bottom. Mm-hmm. Because this is the feeling of hopelessness. That's the worst. When they go, or if they go, they might go 6-6 next year. I don't know. But if they go 4-8 next year, you're not going to have this same feeling. What you're going to have next year is optimism. And you know why you'll have optimism? Because it's the same thing that happens every time there's a new coach hired. You'll be filled with hope. You'll be filled with, okay, this can work. The only time that hasn't happened in any coaching tenure ever that I can remember was when they hired Steve Alford. Because I think everyone from the jump knew what that thing was.
And it was just a matter of time. Now, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to give one parting bit of advice to kind of piggyback on you, Dave. I moved to Washington in 2004. When I moved up here, UCLA had just ran a train on Washington. Well, Maurice Jones-Drew did. You might need to
301 yards?
301 yards, like five where he didn't even get sneezed on. He was so just like in running gigantic holes. Washington won one game that year. I was at that game. It was against San Jose State the weekend after I moved up here. My father-in-law took me to the game at Husky Stadium. They did not win a game the rest of that season. The next year, they were mediocre. When they hired Tyron Willingham, and I'll never forget the Notre Dame fan. I went to a game at Husky Stadium. They played Notre Dame, and a Notre Dame fan was wearing a shirt that said, "You will never win when you're playing for a tie." And the ominous feeling that Tyron Willingham was not good, even though Jake Locker had one of his best seasons under him. They hit rock bottom in 2008 by going 0-12. Mm-hmm. Steve Sarkisian the next year beat Pete Carroll with almost the exact same cast of characters in a pre-portal era where you couldn't get a quick fix. This was a team that literally went 0-12 the year before. He had them in a bowl game by 2010. By 2016, they were a playoff team. Yes, it was 8 years. But as I talk with my friends and colleagues that are UW fans that are flying sky high because of Kalen DeBoer, they keep saying they don't go back to the Tyron Willingham years, even though that they thought that was rock bottom. No, rock bottom was 2 years ago when they lost to the University of Montana in Husky Stadium, and then needed a random writer to find on Twitter Jimmy Lake assaulting Ruparake Fuavai and tweeting it and causing such an outcry that they had to fire Jimmy Lake. And 2 years later, Washington is in a position to win a national championship.
Yeah, think about UCLA in that similar position, and they don't find that. Jimmy Lake goes 4-8, and they're just like, oh, sorry, we're stuck with him. Because that is hopelessness. That is hopelessness. That is the feeling you feel right now, but arguably a little bit worse.
And I'll go back to my Jim Mora. When Tyron Willingham was going 0-12, there was a popular shirt because that was an election year. Remember, there was the Barack Obama shirt that said hope. And my same dear UW friend has the shirt in his house. It was a picture of Jim Mora on a purple shirt, and it just said hope.
And the thing is, counterfactual world where Jim Mora arrives at the University of Washington instead of Steve Sarkisian in 2009, Jim Mora is still the UW coach, and maybe they don't even ever make a playoff, but they're winning 9-10 games almost every year. He would have murdered
Miles Jack job. Probably plays for the University of Washington in that case.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been fun. I've had a good time talking to you. I do not know if anyone will have a good time listening to this, but I don't care. You know, we're just spitting hard truths. You were singing absolute bars there. You were dropping bars, whatever the kids say, you were doing it. And I talked. And now we're done.
I was basically half Mexican Drake is what I was doing.
Whatever it was beautiful. For Brandon Huffman.
Go Army, beat Navy.
We'll hopefully have John Evergreen on next time. just Brandon Huffman this time.
Legally changed his name to John Elizabeth, by the way.
I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online. We'll talk to you again next time.
Let's go! It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.